The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to February 2007.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors and visiting faculty in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and we're happy to have you with us, and let me introduce the panel to you. To my left, from the Department of Philosophy, no longer its chair or bark a lounger, but always happy to be in the living room of ideas, is Professor Beth Oljar.
I'm just chilling in the living room of ideas
and
now.
And that's okay, because, well, you want to be warm in. This has been a cold and snowy week. I mean, now, I know we're not Buffalo. I know, Dan, we're not Erie. But this was our first big winter blast, so to speak.
Well, and I've been getting use out of that wonderful throw that you gave me for Christmas, which is so soft and warm.
Oh, hey, that's what winter's for wool and wrapping up, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, strange but true, on another side of the table, I think for the first time in Ask the Professor history, from the Department of Mathematics and Math Education, it's Professor Jeff Boats.
I'm switched over to the left wing, or am I the right wing? I can't tell which side, depending on the face.
Well, that's okay. If you can't decide which side, you'll be perfect for Congress.
As long as I'm at the center, because I can't face off, you know. I'm just...
Non-binding resolutions everywhere you look.
Everywhere you look. Everywhere you look. And sitting next to Jeff, also from the Department of Mathematics, a returning professor. We're happy to say it's Professor Lazarus Kikis.
Nice to be here.
And we're glad to have you back.
Thank you.
How are you staying warm?
Oh, drinking lots of tea.
All right. Good man yourself.
Lots of tea and chocolate.
The magic elixir.
Lots of tea and chicken soup.
Ooh, the chicken soup.
Orange spice tea.
Ooh, yeah. Now, at the far end of the table, from the College of Engineering and Science, the person who coordinates the pre-college engineering program, someone who's got to keep the children warm on the weekend, it's Professor Dan Maggio. Hey, how do you do that in this cold weather? The kids pretty much just get dropped off, right, at the building?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the parents don't even stop the car.
Where they just open the door and toss them like kids.
Drive-by, here we go. Get out of the car, you. But you don't have to cope with recess. I have to admit, that was one reason that I moved from elementary to secondary ed really fast. Because I thought once the kids went out on the playground and ran around in recess, they would be, like, pretty much all their energy would be spent. Oh, no. They came back in more supercharged for the afternoon. It was really scary.
Wasn't it that way when you were a kid? I mean, I remember it being that way.
Except I went to Catholic school, and we had this unique, first of all, they separated the boys and girls on the playground, and then secondly, you had three bells. The first bell, you had to stop in motion, and which we love, because you would, of course, do all types of exciting stop poses. And then the second was that you then got into line, and the third bell, you marched into the building, so... That's why I still, like, do weird things when I hear bells. I can't help myself.
She stops and does great poses.
Yes. I vogue. It was the first voguing done on the west side
of
Detroit.
Kathy Pavlov Bush.
Yes, that's right. Now, let me introduce our visiting professor, someone who is carrying the Mansour Standard forward here at UDM. His grandfather was a professor of mathematics here, as well as a dean in the College of Business and Administration. That was Joseph Mansour. And this is Andrew Mansour, who is a philosophy major here at the university, who is joining us today as a junior faculty member. So welcome, Andy.
Thank you much.
We're glad to have you with us. Now, I'm sure you might know something about the show, but this is a show where we say you match wits with us, and these are questions that are sent in to us from various listeners. If they stump the panel, they win a prize, and if they don't stump the panel, they win a prize. So in a philosophical way, that's right.
From the business standpoint, you know, we got to make some, we'll work on that.
That's right. It's such a deal. So how can you get those questions to us? Well, of course, as you know, you can listen to us. We're podcasted now, so you can certainly, you know, get us over the internet. But you can also email atp@udmercy.edu or visit our website, which is www.udmercy.edu/atp for Ask the Prof. Or even play around with the postal service. Just slap a stamp on an envelope and send it care of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols, Detroit 48221. Now, we left off last time with a set of questions that were really interesting questions, kind of coming from all over the place, from Matt McKinnon of Redford, Michigan. And these questions were dealing some with film,
with Hollywood, lots of different things that way, or movie promotions.
Right.
And the last question was the one about the how the U.S. and Monaco had the throwdown over the Grace Kelly stamp. That's right. Well, they did. That Monaco, of course, wanted to have her title of, you know, that she was Princess Grace, and of course, the United States, in its egalitarian mode, just threw down Grace Kelly. So, all right. So we'll start here with this next question. Why did the Reese's Candy Company and the Mars Candy Company have a major legal dispute over the movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial?
Didn't he eat M&M's at the end or in the middle of the movie?
They had Reese's.
Reese's pieces had been seen in the movie. That's true. So what do you think, how did the Mars Candy Company, who make M&M's, react?
Well, I know the E.T., what was it, Spielberg, right?
Right, that's right.
Spielberg approached M&M's and asked them if they would, it would be okay if they could show it in the movie, but I think they turned it down, or...
They did originally turn it down, but then they tried something after Reese's candy was used in the film.
They made them from Mars.
Were there like E.T. M&M's, some sort of marketing?
There you go. It was a marketing campaign that they started. They claimed that they wanted to make their product to look very much like what he was eating, with the same colors, and claimed in their advertising campaign that it was E.T.'s favorite candy, not Reese's Pieces. Reese's company threatened Mars with a lawsuit, and actually Mars stepped out. They backed off and didn't do it.
Huh.
Fight the man.
Fight the power. Stick it to the man.
Fight the alien who eats Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
All right. The single most expensive special effect of the film history of silent movies took place in a Buster Keaton film. Can you name that film and what this expensive effect might have been?
Buster Keaton versus Godzilla.
Oh, no, it was really Buster Keaton versus Mothra. No, I'm sorry, another one.
So close.
Now, Buster Keaton, he was the famous kind of comedian, did like that one train movie.
Yes. Okay, and that was
so,
it.
Yeah.
The train wreck scene at the end of the film, The General, is the most expensive special effect in silent movies because they really did ruin a train.
Okay.
There must have been some incredible... I mean, I know I've read these things about, you know, different early Hollywood directors and the budgets that they used, like real silk and pearls and costumes, and I thought, my God.
I just happened to watch that movie about a year ago or so.
Really?
My mom rented it. And
cool. Your mom's got great taste. Okay. In one of his movies, actor Danny Kaye sang a song entitled Tchaikovsky.
Okay.
The lyrics of this song are very unusual. How?
They don't make any sense.
Most of what Danny Kaye didn't make much sense. But
who's Danny Kaye?
The all-time comedian.
White Christmas.
Actor.
Have you ever seen him in White Christmas? He's the partner to Bing Crosby in their show business, and when they're in the army together. No.
Secret
was
Life.
Was Marlo Thomas' father? St. Jude's Children's Society?
No, that's Danny Thomas.
Oh,
yeah,
never
this is Danny Kaye.
Never mind.
That's okay.
Danny Kaye,
K-A-Y-E.
Is he in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
That's him. Okay. That's exactly right.
I can't picture him.
Kind of blondish.
Kind of had reddish blonde hair.
Could sing and dance. Did some stage work. The lyrics of the song Tchaikovsky are entirely composed of the names of famous Russian composers.
Oh, okay.
So the whole song is just nothing but...
Well, I was close because I said the lyrics were in Russian.
So Russian names. We'll give you half for that.
So you just basically rattled off a list of composers and...
Was this the inspiration for Monty Python's Philosopher's
Philosophy?
I think it
song.
Could be, yes.
You know what? I have that album.
So. Oh, that is a great song. It really
At
is.
At home, buried in my closet, I think.
Name the well-known American actor who as a teenager... As a high school student, wrote a high school textbook entitled A Practical Guide to Shakespeare. Practical Guide to Shakespeare. This is when he was
Robin
in high
Williams?
School. No.
Am I close?
Well, they're both actors, but this guy... I think this gentleman is
comedic
very well known
actor?
As... not really.
Serious?
He, somewhat serious. Also directed films, wrote...
Oh, Orson Welles.
That's it, Orson Welles. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, we'll sell no wine before you pay for it.
You know, it's kind of sad that really at the end of his career he was hawking, you know, the vino that way, you know, because he was truly brilliant altogether. And even did great work on Broadway with John Houseman, you know, did some great stuff that way. Her middle name is Louise. Her last name is Chiquione. What is her well-known first
Madonna.
Name? Madonna.
Madonna.
From, of course, we know.
Here Bay from, City, Michigan.
Yeah, that's where she was born.
She's a Bay City roller.
That's I thought right. She was born in Rochester.
That's where she went to school.
Oh.
I liked the Bay City Rollers. Quite flat as a child. Had that album.
There we go. Name the mysterious radio crime fighter that Orson Welles briefly played in the late 1930s.
The Shadow?
Yes. And who played opposite Welles as Margot Lane on The Shadow? Now, she would later be with his Mercury Players, but probably is better remembered for a role on Bewitched.
Me in eighth grade drama.
Oh, Agnes Moorehead?
I was
Agnes
Margot Moorhead. Lane, actually.
Oh. It is Margot Lane, exactly. But yes, it was Agnes Moorehead. She was one of the Mercury Players. She's probably in one of, I think she's fantastic in The Magnificent Ambersons, one of Welles, I think one of his better films, but mangled by Hollywood. On the evening of October 30th, 1938, a small town called Grover's Mill, New Jersey, received a great deal of unexpected national attention.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Not the first Devil's Night? No.
War of the Worlds?
I think they were tipping cows years before that. Yes, it's War of the Worlds. It was the town that was invaded by the Martians in Orson Welles' broadcast, again, a Mercury Theater broadcast, of the War of the Worlds.
Although we were on sort of an Orson Welles.
I was going to say, we suddenly kind of just went, next. You know, like, whoa, that way. Can you name the longtime radio and TV announcer who achieved broadcast immortality by mispronouncing the name of President Herbert Hoover?
Hebert Hoover.
He referred to him as Hubert Heaver.
Right.
This is a hard name to give a clue by, so it's Harry Van Zyl. But yeah, that must have been really, really embarrassing.
That was my next guess.
At break time, I will tell another famous broadcast story that I cannot tell over the air.
He can bleep it out.
Oh, no, I don't want Michael to have to do too much editing in that way. What was
He's
the...
laughing.
No,
He's got
Michael.
The mic off.
Uh-oh. What was the real name of the Lone Ranger? That is the character, the Lone Ranger, not the actor who portrayed the Lone Ranger.
When was the Lone Ranger out?
Oh, wow. Lone Ranger was back in silent films. It was on radio. Oh. I think it became television in the 50s, didn't it? I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That sounds correct.
Okay.
Yep.
This is interesting enough. It's the same name as someone who wrote 10 Days That Shook the World.
John Reed.
John Reed. Yeah, that's it. I was going to say philosophy department ought to know that one. You ought to know that one.
Especially since I did actually sit all the way through Reds, which is a very long film.
You got that right. Sort of like Annie Hall goes to Kiev its parts.
Although I liked Maureen Stapleton as
very
as
much
Emma,
as Emma Goldman. She was fantastic.
Who was such a just wonderful, feisty, radical
very, very
woman.
Good. And really, Jack Nicholson as Eugene O'Neill is a really interesting portrayal, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there you go. What other longtime radio and TV crime fighter could claim the Lone Ranger as an ancestor? Now, this was later made into... It's a comic series, and it was later made into a television program in the 60s, late 60s, early
70s. The Green Hornet?
The Green Hornet, exactly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the relationship is. I wish he might have told us that.
No clue.
Hmm.
Or the Kato Show, as
Wait
it was
a minute.
Known
That's
in
right,
Hong Kong.
Kato
the
Show.
Lone Ranger was...
John, an ancestor of...
Was it John Reed?
Yeah, John Reed. So I'm
and
trying
what
to
was
see.
The... Van Williams played the Green Hornet, who was...
Peters.
Oh, I think he was Reed.
Somebody?
Yeah, it was a Reed. Was
there
the
you
name.
Go. Maybe he's like a grandchild or something.
I never made the connection.
Huh, I was going to say, never, never. Can you name the unlikely actor who played Sheriff Matt Dillon in the radio version of Gunsmoke? His initials would be W.C.
William Conrad.
Yeah, William Conrad. Right. I did not know that.
You
that's
go, a, girl.
That's really unusual. Let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Live on tape from my dining room, the University of Detroit Mercy presents
Unplugged.
If we don't get this on the air pretty soon, we'll be too far in the bag to do
I'll
it.
I'll tell you, this is amazing. Yes, the world tour continues and didn't get any farther than this, so...
Hey, this is a great place to be.
Anyway, the University of Detroit Mercy prevents Asser Professor as if they could try as hard as they might.
Successive generations of administrations have tried.
Tried, and they failed.
We're
That's
still
right.
here, and they're gone. What were their names?
I don't know. What are their names now? Who cares?
Oh. All right, we've got only about, let's see, 7 more questions here on the film's net from Matt McKinnon of Rutherford, Michigan. Can you name the radio comedian with whom Jack Benny had a longtime fake feud?
Bob Hope?
So who's Jack Benny?
Jack Benny?
Jack Benny.
Okay, once again, dear, this goes
old
way back.
Old-time comedian.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. He had a kind of a running gag about how cheap he was and had a very, very sad style on the violin. Like
or just play it in.
Like cat spaying music. That's how bad it was. It was really bad. The comedian was Fred Allen.
Oh.
Okay.
Jack Benny was famous for sort of giving a certain kind of look to the camera that... Actually, Johnny Carson ended up just totally stealing from him.
Absolutely, absolutely. When Jack Benny had his radio show, one would often hear the phrase LSMFT. So what did that acronym LSMFT stand for? And why was it on the show? Now, think about a habit that some of us have.
Mm-hmm. Smoking.
And think about a cigarette that would have the initials LS. Kind of an older
Lucky
brand.
Strike.
Lucky Strike. Yeah. Yes, Lucky Makes Strikes.
For?
Fine tobacco?
A Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
Oh, it means fine
there
tobacco.
There it is. I will also, again, at the next break, give another story about that acronym. However, yes, for many, many years, Jack Benny's premier sponsor was Lucky Strike Cigarettes.
Hmm.
So, yes. So, yes, indeed. There we go.
That's cool.
The Great Gildersleeves was a spinoff of what other popular radio show?
Gildersleeves.
Yeah, the Great Gildersleeves. This was a very popular radio program that involved a very messy closet when it was...
Amos and Andy?
Not Amos and Andy, but equally as...
Fibber McGee and Molly.
Exactly. Very, very classic.
Don't open the closet.
That's right. Because you'd hear all these things just clanging and banging and falling out, so it was... bit like Hogan's Alley in that
sort of way. Like Dick Van Dyke had to fall down every episode.
Yes,
you know?
His little prat that he would do as he came into his
lovely
suburban home. Oh, Rob! Yes, it was so bad. Senator Claghorn, Titus Moody, Mrs. Nusenbaum, and Ajax Cassidy were all residents of this very well-known radio street. It's alliterative. What was the name of the program?
Something Lane.
Not Lane, but something
at least,
behind many houses. Often
alley.
Alley, okay, so.
Let's think of a word.
Think of an adjunct with the letter A that worked
adjunct
in the
alley?
Department. Adjunct alley. That's how most of us feel with our pay. We're scrounging through garbage cans. Feed me.
Allen's alley.
That's exactly Allen's right.
Alley. He wanted to remind me of that. Alley.
Yes. Senator Claghorn. Was a model for a very well-known Warner Brothers cartoon character, also Southern and also
Foghorn and Leghorn.
Foghorn Leghorn. That's it. I'll say. I love Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh, he's awesome.
I thought he was great. And our last question for Matt: this comedian's show is considered to be the last one that started during radio's golden age. He was a great comedian. Name that show.
When was the golden age ended?
Well, it went really from about, you'd say 1930, you could say like right up to maybe about 1955, because then television really starts moving in and just really taking over the radio market.
Bob Hope, Steve Allen.
He did a kind of very humorous history of the United States. Stan Freeberg.
Howard Zinn?
Howard Zinn. But have you ever asked your classes that question? I'll ask them, how many of you listen to the radio in your car? Very few hands go up. A lot of them listen to music or CDs in their car.
No.
But for radio, any radio programs that you listen to, and they're
That's
very...
all I listen to.
Thank you.
No, I listen to radio, not
I know,
not
that's
music.
What I mean. I'm always very surprised by
that. Well, I listen to... music on the radio.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I've never listened to NPR.
Oh, that's all
that's
I...
really
in my
good.
Life. I don't even know what the call letters
are. Are you
serious? Yeah.
I never changed. That's all it's ever on. Ever, even at home. When I'm not watching TV. Yeah.
You're very intellectual.
Except at Christmas, I have the Christmas music on, but generally I don't listen to music. I like NPR. And if I put my iPod on...
My brother really likes NPR, too.
Yeah, that's what I...
They got some good stuff, though.
Although I did sign a petition to you know, because Bush is trying to ban or cut funding further for NPR and PBS or public, you know.
Well, that's because they can't control.
Yeah, NPR for any media outlet that isn't controlled by a multi-billion-dollar conglomerate. So I signed a petition to prevent that.
Okay, well, we thank Matt for his questions. He will get a non-winner's package, or a winner's package, I guess. Well, whatever. You'll get a package, honey. You'll get one of those great Tech Day T-shirts. So we'll move on to our next set of questions.
You still have those?
I do, yeah. Wally.
Marty's still got a ton of ethics.
We still got some ethics.
Still
have ethics.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so for like Dave Chow, for example, he's already got a Tech Day, so I got to send him an ethics bowl shirt. Yeah. Our next set of questions is from Ann Taylor of Westland, Michigan. And she said, "Dear professors, here is a group of questions from all over the place. You may grade yourself. I love your program. And I hope you enjoy my questions."
They never give us anything to fight for.
I know.
I like it when we can grade ourselves.
But we agree. Pass your papers to the left, everybody.
Okay. And then to
what
the
do we
right.
agree on? 75% is what we were going to always shoot for.
Well, how many questions are there?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 20.
Oh, okay. So we got to get 15 right.
Okay. So you want 15 out of 20 as your count pass, there, as your pass rate?
Don't you guys want any extra credit?
Or? Oh, man.
I don't think
Look
we
like
need.
A true student.
We definitely don't need extra credit since Kathy is a little generous with her clues.
Well, I hope that I.
Are you challenging?
And we appreciate
the integrity of our moderator.
And of course not. Never. I put that chalkboard down months ago. I don't do that any longer. All right. Which Old Testament prophet foresees the day when men will, quote, beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks?
Isaiah?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. In the end of the film, will success spoil Rock Hunter? The title character retires to a chicken farm. But what was his former occupation?
Did any of you have you seen or heard that film?
I have, but
was he a chicken farmer before?
No. I think you could say this was his far
worked on Wall Street
from chicken farm. Well, he worked in New York
in advertising.
Yes, in advertising. True enough. Yeah, I think advertising at that time period was really sort of people looked at it not as a shameful profession, but one that certainly seemed not shady, but at least in some ways
Black
suspect.
Integrity.
Yes, very much so. According to their slogan of campaigns, advertising campaigns in the 1950s, what kind of cows produced carnation milk?
Carnation?
Artificial
milk.
Cows?
Happy cows?
Well, there's
flower
specific
cows?
Beyond happy. They're not just happy.
They're ecstatic.
Well, it's a sort of a degree of happiness. Not raucous happiness, but in a sense something more serene and alliterative.
Alliterative with carnation?
Yes.
Content?
Contented cows, that's right.
Going for eudaimonia, but somehow I figured Aristotle didn't play
that's
a role
okay.
in that.
But was this carnation, I wonder if they're referring to fresh milk or they're referring to tin milk, you know?
You said from the 50s?
It's from the 50s.
No, that's probably tin milk.
You think so? It's like that pet milk. Hmm. God, I hope nobody drank that a lot.
These are the recipes. I didn't even know.
I know to
drank
bake
it.
With. I was going to say I bake fudge with it, and of course at Thanksgiving
well,
time.
Milk,
yeah, like if that's what I mean. If it's like that kind of condensed.
That.
Yeah, I just I wonder
really
if they were like a dairy
sweet,
dairy.
Isn't it sweet?
Yeah, they do. There's sweetness to it. That's a little. Rocky Lane provided the voice of what television character in the 1960s? There seems to be kind of like this farm kind of theme to this. These questions.
Petticoat Junction.
Wilbur.
Who was
Mr. Ed?
Mr. Ed.
Oh,
love
oh,
that show.
Of course.
That was a great
no,
show.
I've never seen.
Course, you have never seen Mr. Ed?
No, I mean I
haven't seen like
it's a piece
full
of America.
Of
oh,
but
wow.
where would I have seen it? And if I
was
oh,
it
oh,
like
a
TV
Land.
Yeah,
was
Nick at Night had it.
No, I don't
yeah.
usually watch Nick at Night.
Oh, okay.
TV Land.
Oh, okay.
But they don't show.
Yeah, they definitely need to bring Mr. Ed back.
You know, all the shows you could show from the past, TV Land picks like 10, and half of them are dumb. The Gunsmoke and Bonanza.
Oh, but you know, like, think about
Star
it.
Trek on.
Oh, did they? Really?
Yes.
What's wrong with Bonanza?
Well, you know, after a while, a little hot.
If you have to ask.
Ponderosa,
if you
is
have
that what
to
you're
ask,
me?
Is that what they say?
I know my grand loved Ponderosa because she just loved Hoff. What a good boy. He always listened to his father.
TV Land was showing MacGyver for a while, so I got no problem with it.
Okay, yeah. Besides, Lauren Green was Canadian.
They
he was a broadcaster
like,
for the BBC.
They brought Night Court back for
CBC.
A while, which was really cool.
Oh, my goodness, Night Court. Wow.
But that's... of all the old shows, you know.
Yeah, okay. Before he became National Public Radio's cowboy philosopher, what was Baxter Black's profession?
When did he change?
When did he become a cowboy philosopher?
Well, then he does those spots sometimes on NPR talking about American life.
Guest commentaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Was he in farming or agriculture?
Well, he would something that would be connected to farming, I would believe, not crop farming, but
he make tractors. Rancher.
He made fertilizer and still does.
He was a large animal veterinarian. You know,
I couldn't get off the cattle.
I know. I could, that's what I mean. I didn't want to. I couldn't say grazing because that would just be like so obvious. You know. Well, maybe I could have. Okay. It
must be an interesting job.
Being a large animal veterinarian.
I've seen what they do on Animal Planet.
Oh yeah,
that's what Julia Roberts wants to be in. A comedy she made called Something to Talk About with Dennis Quaid, which is actually very good.
She said she wanted to be a large animal veterinarian.
Well, her family, clearly the family is, the movie takes place like in Kentucky or Virginia.
Oh,
you know, some big horse, and her family owns stables and has been involved in the riding business for ages. So it's actually a really funny movie.
I don't know. I think I'd rather be a small animal veterinarian. I'd like to rather handle like cats and dogs.
Yeah.
Like little Peanut, for example.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well. Dan looks like, wow, he's been through the wars with little Peanut.
Lots of playing.
I was going to say, what has Peanut been like taking up a razor blade fighting or what?
No, seriously, fight. Just playing.
Oh,
just
wow.
Just like this. But he'll look at that.
Oh my! That cat's got like Velcro claws. Like,
the claws need to be cut. It's time to cut.
Oh, will he let you cut them?
No, well, of course not.
Oh,
so I'll come back
veterinary.
Next week with this handle.
Dan looks like he's been mainlining or something.
It has. No, no, it happens all the time. But this is particularly bad.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of.
Oh, I'm sorry. On the cartoon George of the Jungle, Henry Cabot Henhouse III. Drank a super sauce and turned into what comic hero?
The giant chicken. I don't know.
It was super chicken.
No, it's not. I was being just ridiculous.
For super chicken. Yes, it was great. I loved super chicken. Way to go, Dan. Let me thank our panel. We'll stop here.
I'm in shock.
Young Professor Mansour, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Professor Maggio.
Thanks.
Professor Kikas.
Thank you.
Professor Boats.
Chicken man, he's everywhere.
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
Professor Oljar.
Oh, the humanity.
Oh, indeed. And the chicken enemy. And now this word.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Pleasure to have you here, as always. Right. On his right, from the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur B. It's been a long 3 weeks. And on Arthur's right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and the Director of the Learning Center, Kathy Bush.
I'm too tired to say hello.
I know. It's one of those months. Anyway, and on my left, from the Department of History, the chair of that department, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Why, Evan, you must have whose car is in the way. I just want to get out, but I can't because there's that car in my way.
It's Rosalind Carter.
I've been trying to back up, but I just can't.
She's been hitting my car.
Ask the Professor is transcribed in the facilities of the Communication Studies Department studios on the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced, technically directed, and so often saved by Michael Jason. And our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Let's go, Red Wings!
And we're back next week with another edition of Ask the Professor, so please plan to join us.